From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, President Barack Obama comes to Austin to see how Texas is creating jobs. The clock is running out on the Texas legislature and bills are dying. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. On Thursday, President Barack Obama flew into Austin to promote his jobs and middle-class growth strategy, and a big part of that plan is investment in education. The president underscored that point while stopping to address students at the Manor New Tech High School. Texas Public Radio's Ryan Poppy was there and has this report.
During his speech to students at the Manor New Tech High School, President Barack Obama says that repurposed schools like Manor New Tech that lean heavily on STEM-based education are the starting point for the latest jobs in the tech industry.
At Manor, a history teacher might get together with a math teacher and develop a project about the impact of castles on world history and the engineering behind building castles. Or a group of students might be in charge of putting together a multimedia presentation about the moral dilemmas in literature as applied to World War II. Internships help students get even more hands-on experience.
But how can the rest of the country and the rest of Texas extend this technology-based education being taught at schools like Manor New Tech? Austin Democratic State Senator Kirk Watson says he has the answer.
Part of what we need to do is we need to recognize that this creativity leads to greater creativity. It creates the skills and creates the skill sets for the jobs that we need. But it also means we need to create the programs. We're going to need to focus on providing the resources.
Watson says that is the purpose of the president's trip, tapping the business community to develop partnerships between schools and technology companies. Austin Democratic Representative Mark Stroma says that schools like Manor New Tech don't happen without outside investors and foundations. He says that's something the state should be funding. Ryan Poppy, Texas Public Radio News.
While in Austin, the president also toured the Capital Factory downtown, a headquarters for small business software startups, and then he went on to visit the Applied Materials Semiconductor Manufacturing Campus. Here's a sample of what he told those Austin workers and entrepreneurs.
You're all focused on the future. Every day you're pushing the limits of technology a little bit further. And you're not alone, because somewhere over at the Capital Factory, there's an entrepreneur mapping out a new product on a whiteboard that may be the next big thing. Somewhere over at Manor New Tech High School, there's a kid scribbling down an idea for a new invention that one day may turn into an entirely new industry. That's America. And when you look out across this room, what you also notice is there's talent drawn from every segment of our society. We don't care what you look like, where you come from, what your last name is. We just want to make sure we're all working together to create a better future for our kids. That's America. We innovate, we adapt, we move forward. That's what Austin's all about. That's what's going on in this city. And that's what I want to keep on promoting as your president of the United States of America. Thank you, everybody. God bless you. God bless America.
When President Obama landed in Austin, he was warmly greeted by Governor Rick Perry. In the past, the two have not seen eye to eye on most issues, but on this occasion, the two shook hands and appeared to have a friendly but brief chat. With audio courtesy of TexasTribune.org, here's Governor Perry talking to reporters about the exchange and his take on the president coming to Texas on a jobs tour.
It's the best place in America to come learn how to create jobs. We do a very good job of it. Matter of fact, the best in the country since the last decade. 33% of all the jobs created in America have been created right here in the state of Texas. So Austin being a high-tech center and a manufacturing site now, so they're doing things right in Austin. We're doing things right in Texas, and I think the president is wise to come here and take a look at it.
What did he tell you?
He was glad to be in Texas and that he'd be happy to have those kolaches. We didn't get a chance to get that in depth in our conversation, so it was pretty much a quick, appropriate welcome to Texas Conversation, and he headed on over to say hi to the folks that came out to welcome me. Listen, the president's probably got some good ideas. The president's got some things that philosophically I'm not going to support. He believes that government needs to be the generator of the dollars that flow into the economy. I don't. I think it's the private sector that needs to be freed up from overtaxation, overregulation, and we have a philosophical disagreement. But the results are what really matter. And as people look at this country and as they make decisions between policies that are put in place at the state levels, it becomes very apparent that if you're interested in creating jobs, if you're interested in creating an environment where people are freer, that these red states are the ones that are doing a better job of that. I mean, he didn't go to Detroit. He didn't go to Chicago. He didn't go to some of the cities in California that have declared bankrupt. He came to Austin, Texas. And he came here because we are a success story. And whether you're, you know, playing for the red team or whether you're playing for the blue team, you like to hang out with a winner. And Texas is a winner.
Joining me now to discuss President Obama's trip to Austin is KUT's Ben Philpott, who covered the whirlwind day.
Well, you know, if you want to be a little cynical, and I guess we all are a little cynical from time to time, President Obama, you know, comes to Austin because that's where some of his fundraising base is. You know, he's got some major donors that live in the area, and so he's here to, you know, kind of say hi and shake some hands and make sure they consider him for, you know, future funding things. But this tour that he's on, though, the stated reason for his being here was to kick off a tour that he's calling, you know, the Middle Class Jobs and Opportunity Tour. And he said he wanted to come to Austin to highlight some of the things that the city is doing right and that he thinks other cities and other parts of the country could adopt in creating their own middle class and you know, good-paying tech jobs.
The national conversation has been immigration, guns, and Washington, D.C., backbiting, bickering. And now we're putting jobs and the economy back on the radar screen. Wow, the thing that people really care about. That's astonishing.
Well, you know, the economy has improved under President Obama, but it still remains sluggish. And while those other issues are kind of being battled about in Congress, I guess maybe he just wants to, you know, draw attention to things that maybe he can put pressure on the Congress to work on and to adopt some of the business policies that he's been trying to get through Congress for the last several years. You know, one of the things that he talked about on Thursday, the White House put out a release early Thursday morning saying that the federal government was going to fund an additional three what they're calling manufacturing innovation institutes. Now, there was a pilot program earlier in Youngstown, Ohio. He's now saying, look, we're going to put out three more bids for three new areas. And, of course, you know, maybe Austin could be one of those because he talked about the idea of a town where the large university and the business community would get together and try to get this. Get this bid, the president would like to see $1 billion investment in these innovation institutes, but of course he needs Congress's help to get that full billion instead of just the $200 million that he's adding now.
So as President Obama got off the plane, he was welcomed warmly by Texas Governor Rick Perry. Was that kind of, you know, phantasmagoric to see the two standing there and we're getting along pretty well?
It was easy for Governor Perry to have a big smile and give a big handshake and a pat on the back to the president for this trip because, again, you know, the president is coming to talk about the job creation engine that is Texas. And, of course, that's the favorite thing of Governor Perry to talk about. That's what he ran his presidential campaign on. You know, I'm the job creator. Texas economy is doing great. Everyone should follow the Texas model. Well, now the president's coming down to essentially highlight things that he likes about what's going on in Austin. And, you know, Governor Perry couldn't agree more with him. So it was very easy for him to be there on the tarmac and give him that big handshake and big smile.
Well, could the takeaway be that, you know, well, of course, Texas has these policies that will help job growth, but Austin is also a very liberal bastion and does things to support education at every opportunity, so that maybe the win-win is when the two philosophies find common ground and are able to, you know, actually do well together, not fight each other.
Well, and that is one thing that, you know, I said in a story that I had on his trip that, you know, President Obama kind of stole a line from, or didn't necessarily steal a line, but took a line that Governor Perry used very often when he was on the campaign trail running for president, which is that, you know, the president said, I'm a huge believer that the private sector is the driver of job creation, but that government can play a beneficial role in the process, or it can impede it. But he talked about the idea of, you know, look, one of the reasons Austin does so well is that you have a you have the University of Texas there, which the state and which, you know, local leaders have continued to fund as and continue to make a large investment in, because they know that it is an innovation driver and a jobs driver and a technology driver. So, you know, that's kind of the middle ground that you were talking about. You've got yes, you want to have the private sector create these jobs, as the Republicans always talk about. But at the same time, if you don't have some of the investment that you tend to get Democrats talking about, like at a public university, then it can't work.
Looking at social media in Austin about the president's trip, the thing people were focused on were traffic and barbecue.
Yeah, you know, that was really funny. Austin, I think, over the last couple of years has really grown up a big foodie culture, and, you know, we've become a little snobbish about our restaurants here in town. Stubbs is a very good barbecue restaurant, but I think it, you know, a lot of people would say it may not be in their top five in barbecue in Austin, and therefore, if the president's going to go have barbecue, he should have had it at one of the best place in town and not something that cynical would say is just for the tourists.
The barbecue snobs.
The barbecue snobs, exactly. Now, I pointed out quickly, though, that the problem is the what is kind of the consensus best barbecue restaurant in town is a place where people line up starting at, you know, 8 a.m., and sometimes they sell out of barbecue by 1 in the afternoon, and you have to stand in line for an hour or two before you can actually get in there. And, you know, people were complaining that he went to Stubbs. If he had gone to this other barbecue place, Franklin's Barbecue, and broken in line to get barbecue, I think that would have caused a whole lot more problem.
Ben Philpott is a reporter for KUT Austin and the TexasTribune.org. When it comes to jobs in Austin or anywhere else, all is not equal. That's very apparent for Latinos in Texas. Latino unemployment in the U.S. is higher than the national average, though in Texas, Latinos have more low-wage opportunities. KUT reporter Veronica Zarigovia takes a look at how Latinos are doing when it comes to finding work in the home of the Texas miracle.
Nicolas Gutierrez holds his girlfriend's hand as they look at barbecue grills outside of a Fiesta supermarket in Austin. Gutierrez is turning 40 this month, and he works in construction. For years, he worked in Houston, but he got sick of the low wages. He says around $11 an hour.
I decided to look for the company here that I used to work for. So I went, and the boss who was there is my baseball teammate, and he contracted me.
Now he makes a little more and says he feels at home.
I wouldn't change Texas for New York. I was in Miami and a few other places, but where things have gone best for me is here in Texas.
According to a 2010 Census Bureau report, almost a million Latinos in Texas work in construction. In cities like Austin, they stand to gain as projects keep popping up. As President Barack Obama toured the Texas Capitol, he called for a renewal of manufacturing jobs and remarked on Texas's employment. Governor Rick Perry calls the state a leader in job creation. Some have called its economy the Texas miracle. Gary Bertlis is with the Brookings Institution.
One of the main drivers of the Texas economy is oil and gas, and the oil and gas industry sometimes is riding high when the rest of the economy is falling low.
The Economic Policy Institute projects Latino unemployment in Texas will be at about 8% by year's end. Employment here has consistently been above the national average. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Latino unemployment in the U.S. is at about 9%. Doug Hall with the Institute says even though that was a drop from last year, there's little to celebrate.
While certainly, you know, I'm sure that Latino workers had unemployment rates, you know, in excess of, you know, in double digits during the worst times of the recession, a 9% unemployment rate is certainly nothing to be celebrated.
Catherine Singley says when Washington can't agree on economic policy, it can affect local economies, even in Texas. She's with the National Council of La Raza, or NCLR.
the federal budget cuts that are affecting everything from education to job training to military bases, those play out at the local level. And what it means is that government employees lose jobs, their suppliers lose jobs, and the entire local economy suffers.
But she said recent bipartisan efforts on immigration policy could actually mean more jobs for Latino workers.
Over the past couple of days, there have been several reports talking about the boost to the overall economy that immigration reform would have. And we're encouraged to see that and encouraged to see the progress being made in a bipartisan manner in Congress as we speak.
Doug Hall says immigration policy matters in Texas, as does investment in education. With Latinos poised to be the majority demographic in the state within about 10 years, a clear plan on both would raise Latino employment and boost the Texas economy. Veronica Zaragovia, KUT News.
A new border crossing with Mexico opened a few weeks ago. It links a remote Mexican village with Big Bend National Park in West Texas. The U.S. government, along with Mexican and Canadian partners, is financing a sustainable tourism project in the area under the terms of the NAFTA Free Trade Agreement. But some locals are skeptical about the need for outside help. From Marfa Public Radio, Lauren Matalon reports.
Ivan Sanchez, 21, his face burnished by the sun, stands on a dusty cliff that spills into the Rio Grande. The U.S. steps away, is framed by a Grand Canyon-esque tableau that dwarfs the tiny village of Boquillas, Mexico. His boss, Bernardo Robles, is renovating a stone structure for tourists.
Sea un ejemplo.
Robles believes Boquillas can anchor a reborn economy by funneling tourists into the Red Rock Wilderness that flanks Boquillas and two nearby villages.
Pequeñas a lo largo del Rio Grande.
Before 9/11, 20,000 visitors a year propped up the economy. But now, everyone here knows who Osama bin Laden is. The border was sealed, the economy gutted. The new border crossings bringing hope with help from the outside.
Good morning, good morning.
In September, an agency financed by Canada, the U.S., and Mexico under the NAFTA Free Trade Agreement awarded a 10-month, $100,000 contract to a Washington, D.C.-based consulting company called Solimar International. The contract called for the promotion of sustainable tourism. 9 months into the contract, Solimar says it's drafted a business plan for a community-owned co-op to offer guides for backcountry trips. That enterprise right now appears to be a two-room office with racks of pamphlets. A couple of people sitting around apologize that they're not fully open yet. At least one group of tourists has been told that guides are not yet available. Solimar's consultant on the Boquillas project is Ernesto Hernandez, a native of Veracruz in southern Mexico.
Tourists, sustainable tourists, is the alternative in order to develop the economy for these communities.
I asked how Solimar's consulting will help bring tourists back.
It's going to be more organized. It is a big potential opportunity to show them Mexico in a cultural way and also at the same time develop some good economic interest for both sides.
The same day the border crossing opened, Solimar held what appeared to be an impromptu meeting with a dozen villagers.
Este es un proyecto de desarrollo económico, ¿verdad?
Villagers were asked, "This is an economic development project, right?" Villagers nodded.
Hemos hablado de eso, de conservación, de mejora en la calidad de vida de la comunidad, ¿sí o no?
We've spoken about conservation, improving life here, yes or no? On the street, I ask a villager, Socorro Limón, what does the group do?
No, no me puedo explicar.
I can't really say, she says.
It's really cool to finally get into Mexico. We walked in, it was just really neat.
Boquillas today is a shell of its former self. 300 people then, 90 now. But Boquillas exudes charm and a certain innocence, a legacy of its extreme isolation. But more than a few are skeptical about outsiders telling them how to deal with the hoped-for influx of tourists. Several are already sprucing up rooms to rent out, and three guides told visitors to contact them directly.
La patina!
Other villagers bristle, saying they don't want outsiders fixing what they don't believe is broken.
Es que como antes de 9/11, que todavía no cerraban.
A man says, before 9/11, we dealt with tourists ourselves.
No teníamos reglas. Nunca tuvimos mal con los turismo.
We didn't have rules. We never had issues with tourism. Now, he says, we have to get permission from someone.
Y ahora tienen que pedir ahí permiso que para este y para el otro.
Preparations for visitors are one thing, but right now, not enough tourists are coming to make a difference.
Muy poquito turista.
Todavía no, se ve igual todo.
Solimar's contract expires next month. If Boquillas is to become a model for rescuing broken border economies, villagers say Boquillas needs one thing, more visitors. I'm Lorne Madelon.
Like magic, Thursday night, at the stroke of midnight, about 100 bills in Austin turned into pumpkins and won't become law. It's one of the many deadlines that make up the legislative process in Texas, and it was the last night for state representatives to pass their own bills out of the Texas House. There are now less than 3 weeks before the close of the session on May 27th, and to help us figure out what bills have the mojo to make it into law, Harvey Kronberg is on the line from thequorumreport.com.
Well, technically it's called a deadline for second readings. The second reading is typically where bills are debated on the House floor. That's typically where most of the amendments are added and where the controversies about whatever the bills may be are fought out. The deadline is at midnight. Typically, the calendar bills on it, and it becomes, if you're in the second half of the calendar, the odds are your bill is going to die. And that's pretty much what happened last night. Some of the debate is manufactured specifically to kill bills at the end of the calendar. And some of it just happens because there are controversies that have to be worked on the House floor.
So it's a slaughter of bills, pretty much.
It is typically. I would say that most of the bills that get heard do pass, but when you've got 150 bills and essentially 6 hours to debate them, inevitably the last 25% or 30% just simply can't be heard before the midnight deadline.
In the old days,
they actually used to have people hang over the rail on the gallery and move the clock back an hour. But in this digital age, everybody's watching the digital clock over the speaker's dais, and that kind of game can't get played anymore.
Well, they would switch to El Paso time for a little bit, and then
there was a motion. Every session, there's somebody that gets up to make a motion to suspend the rules and adopt El Paso time, which of course is Mountain time. An hour later.
So, is the mood of this event is it like this incredible urgency, or is this slow walking these things through in order to kill the clock?
Both, actually. For instance, last night there was the last bill that we actually heard was an employee retirement system reform bill that was controversial. Republicans wanted it, Democrats didn't. It came up about 13, 14 minutes before the end of deadline. And in that case, we had what was called chubbing, which is talking the clock out. This session has not been a session filled with huge controversies. The kind of bills that have been making it to the calendar have largely been...
Tweaking...
Exactly. The handful of bills that have been big, important bills go on a whole separate calendar called Major State. And Major State has priority. It's the first thing we take up when we start hearing new bills for the day.
So let's talk about some of the major bills that are out there, and maybe you can help me understand where they are in the process, particularly guns or guns on campus. That's been pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
Where's that?
It's passed the House. The Speaker had, I think, at the beginning of the session, although he never said it publicly, made a deliberate choice that we were going to not have big ideological bills dominate the calendar, much as was the case last time with things like sanctuary cities and voter ID, et cetera. But he did dedicate a single day, a Saturday, and we heard 13 gun bills, among which were the campus carry. Not surprisingly passed, but it doesn't compel universities to offer campus carry. It gives campuses the option to do campus carry. And that was more palatable to a broader base of the members. Now it goes over to the Senate, and because it's optional, each campus can make its own choice, it may actually have some legs. The Senate has been the arena in which the bill has historically failed.
The legislature has been concerned about drones, people using drones to fly over private property and take photos or video without an owner's consent. And so is that look like it's going to become law, a ban on that?
I have no temperature of the Senate on this, but given the kind of libertarian tone of the legislature this cycle, I would presume that it will have support. The original bill was a very broad bill. There have been a number of law enforcement carve-outs and scientific carve-outs that were added as amendments last night. For instance, the Bastrop fires, had we had drones doing analysis, we may have been able to dramatically minimize the damage done by the fire. So they don't want to capture useful intents for drones. They want to essentially capture people who are doing it with malicious intent and then publishing photos without knowledge or consent of the people they're photographing.
So there was some talk about trying to increase a vehicle registration fees in order to raise money for transportation projects, particularly as cars become more gas efficient. We're no longer getting the gas tax income that we were getting before. So what's happening on that?
Well, this was one of the few successes for the Tea Party folks, and in particular Michael Quinn Sullivan and his group Empower Texans. They originally started with a $30 fee. They cut it in half. The loud voices off campus called it a tax. Members were heavily conflicted over it. It would have only raised about $300 million, but which is small potatoes when we're talking about what we need to do for transportation. We had about a two-hour debate on it, and at the end of the day, the bill author, I think, saw that he didn't quite have enough votes. He pulled it out, and he somewhat whimsically said, members, we'll reconsider this when we come back in special session on May 28th. So it went down in flames, and increases the likelihood that we will be back in special session.
Wow. And Rick Perry's been talking about special session because he wants to see what is Rick Perry trying to get?
Well, he's looking for, if I remember correctly, $1.6 or $1.8 billion in tax cuts. We're probably halfway there, frankly, in terms of piecemeal things that we've done during the session, but not in one big bill. He wants infrastructure, that is, roads and money for water infrastructure, but without busting the budget caps, and has threatened a veto on anything that might happen. However, my guess is that if we did end up, there's still plenty of, it seems like we're running out of time, but the Senate has a plan that goes around the spending caps by creating constitutional amendments. The House considers that an abrogation, a duty to send this to the voters, and it requires two-thirds to do almost anything on those issues. And frankly, neither side has, as of today, looks like they have two-thirds for the other side's plan. But funny things happened in the last 2 weeks of a session.
Harvey Kronberg is the editor of the QuorumReport.com, an online newsletter that covers Texas politics. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org, and you can comment on the show on our website at tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters programs available to listen to. And you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.